670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sports Daily. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland, in for Jacob Albrock today on this Thursday edition of the program. It is also our 25th anniversary of the show as well. The show premiered September 11th. I know, unfortunate date, September 11th, the year 2000. And so we are celebrating 25 years of Sports Daily on KFH today with what we do best, talking sports, a normal program here today. No pomp and circumstance, no bells and whistles. We're just talking about all the major things, all the major storylines going on in the world of sports. But we appreciate everybody for joining us and being along with us over the last 25 years. In this hour on the program, we'll be joined by our betting insider, PJ Glasser. Best bets this weekend, college football and NFL. We'll talk about the K-State game as they head out west to take on Arizona on Friday night. Best bets in that game, the Chiefs and Eagles rematch. We'll talk about that as well from the Super Bowl and everything else in the world of both college football and NFL with PJ Glasser. And then later on this hour, our buddy Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com will diagnose what in the world is going on with the Wildcats. That's going to be a pretty entertaining, I would imagine, segment coming up with Tim. You don't want to miss that for sure. So if you are unable to check out that segment or any of them, you can go back and listen anytime on the free Odyssey app. A lot of different ways to get in touch with the program. You can call us on the KFH hotline, 869-1240. You can also leave us a video comment on our video stream on Facebook, X, YouTube, 12 News Connected. A lot of different ways to get in touch with the program there. You can also leave us a voice comment as well on the free Odyssey app. That's all What's on Tap. What's on Tap is brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company with WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama. It's a German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character that's smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, available at all three WBC brew pubs. TJ, you mentioned in our last hour you were up at the Kansas State Fair yesterday, shaking hands and kissing babies. I know that's always one of the most fun parts of the entire year for all you guys up there.
Absolutely. Shook some hands, talked some Chiefs football. A lot of people, it was K-State Day at the fair yesterday,
okay,
actually. So a lot of purple walking around, a lot of Chiefs shirts walking around. And every time that somebody realized that I was a sports guy, it was, man, what's wrong with K-State? Man, what's wrong with the Chiefs? So I answered a lot of those questions.
And I feel like, and this is all due respect to K-State fans, isn't every day at the State Fair K-State Day?
I mean, pretty
much. Right, I mean, because and I don't mean that derogatory at all, but you've got agriculture and livestock and, you know, all the different, like, whatever those words are, animal husbandry. Is that the right? I don't even know if I'm using the right terms here. That's a big part of the state fair. So I would imagine it's pretty much K-State Day every day at the state fair, I would think.
If my wife just heard you say that sentence from her FFA days in Girard High School, she would light you up for
whatever. I'm not trying to be rude here.
No, I don't know what husbandry is. I don't know what that means either.
But, like, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
4-H and
true. Like, there's a reason that she's a K-State fan.
Yeah.
That's the small town way. You do your FFA, you go to the fairs, and you root for K-State. That's kind of what they make their bread and butter on.
I'll be the first to admit. I mean, I'm from a small Kansas farm town, right? Like, 4-H, that was a big part of, you know, I didn't do it, but a lot of people I know did. Harvest was a big part of our summers and in, you know, growing up. So, like, look, I don't mean any disrespect by that at all, but probably more purple than normal at the state fair yesterday, I would think.
Yes, that's true. So a lot of people came up and talked to us at the old Eisenhower building with the KWCH booth. So I got to meet a lot of people, talk to a lot of people.
I think I'm going to take my boys up there tomorrow, late afternoon, to just kind of hang out. And it's funny, like, my son has, we got him a cowboy hat and he's got cowboy boots. he's kind of cosplaying when he wears it. Like it's like one time a year he'll put that on to go to the state fair. Nice. So I think we'll probably do that tomorrow. And then Saturday, which we mentioned this in our last hour, we'll tell you again, Saturday at the state fair, Shocker Nation is painting the Kansas State Fair black and yellow. Shocker Saturday at the state fair. We've got a special show that you can listen to right here on KFH. Our very own Jacob Albrecht will be hosting along with the voice of the Shockers, Mike Kennedy, Kevin Saul, the athletic director, and then a bunch of coaches from Wichita State will be up there as well. Chris Lamb from volleyball, Terry Nooner, women's basketball, Brian Green, baseball, and Christy Breadbinner from softball will all be there. That's 11 o'clock on Saturday, a special program right here on KFH to celebrate Shocker Saturday at the state fair. It kind of snuck up on me, TJ. I forgot that the state fair was even going on until just the other day. And I'm like, wow, you're right. Like it's always beginning of September. And here we go.
Just look in the sky. If it's raining, that means that it's state fair week, basically. It always has to rain on the state fair week. So yeah. I've never been at state fair before last year. So I've only ever gone with Kawich the past 2 years. I never went as a kid growing up. So I was never a state fair guy.
Are you a fair food guy?
We had the Crawford County Fair. We'd go to the county fair and get all the fried food and everything like that. So yes, definitely. I went yesterday. I made a point. Like I told my wife, I was like, listen, you can't judge the money coming out of my account. I'm going to the state fair and I'm going to go gain 10 pounds. So I had a pronto pup for breakfast. I got there, had a Euro from the Euro truck for lunch, some fried Oreos, a little bit of ice cream, so a lemonade, went all in.
You know, I am, when I go to the state fair, for me, it's just Pronto Pup. Like, that's the one, like, and I'll usually do two or three of them, you know, because I've got no shame in that regard. But when I was younger, in my younger days, man, like, I would go to the fair and just go wild. Do you remember when, well, you would have been like 10, but do you remember when the donut burger craze was, like, you had the Krispy Kreme donuts still with the burger in the middle? That was like the very first year. It was like a new thing. And I made a point to go to the fair and I had one. And I remember taking the very first bite and I'm like, all right, this is like outstanding. And then the second bite was a little bit less good than the first one. And then the third bite was worse than that. And by the time I got to like bite five or six, like this was a horrible idea. Shouldn't have done this.
Greasy donuts at that point, yeah.
Yeah, greasy donuts. And then, like, you know, I think that the combination of the donut and the burger and the cheese was probably fine. But they threw, like, pickles on there and onions and, like, they put mustard on it. Like, at that point, I'm like, I'm out. Yeah. Like, too many different flavor combinations. And I paid for it. I'm not going to lie to you. I paid for it later on that night. I'm a little bit too old to be able to do that sort of thing nowadays.
Yeah. So I loaded up yesterday. So good day at the state fair. Rained on us a little bit, but it wasn't 110 degrees, which is nice. So.
It's going to be warm this weekend. So if you're headed up to the state fair, you've got high school football, you've got, you know, a bunch of different things going on this weekend. I know people are going to be out and about. It's going to be kind of that return of summertime. We're looking at temperatures in the upper 80s and lower 90s as well. So there's a lot coming up with that. And so if you can make it up to the state fair, especially on Saturday, you can join us for that special show at 11 o'clock for Shocker Saturday at the state fair. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's only $2.50 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. There is a great slate, TJ, of NFL games in week number 2 coming up. Before we get to our segment with PJ Glasser, our betting insider, after the commercial break, off the top of your head, is there one or two particular games that you've got your eyes on this weekend outside of Chiefs and Eagles?
Yeah, I was going through the list yesterday. There's a couple of them that are going to be really interesting games. For one, I think that the Seahawks versus Steelers, I think we're going to learn a lot about that Steelers team. Obviously, a lot of hype around them last week. Aaron Rodgers getting his first win in Pittsburgh. I think that was a little bit fluky. I think that the Seahawks might go in there and get a win in Pittsburgh. It's going to be an awesome game, I believe. And then other than that, you know, you think about the Sunday night game, the Vikings and the Falcons. I don't know how the Vikings got back-to-back primetime games to begin the season, but they're really showcasing that young quarterback. I think he played pretty well, so able to get that done as well. And then the other one I had circled was that Monday night game, Chargers and Vegas. I think that's going to be an awesome AFC West game because I think the whole division got better. I'm excited to see Ashton Jeanty in primetime versus Omari and Hampton. Will be an awesome game at 9 p.m. That's a Pac-12 after dark on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, it's the doubleheader in Monday Night Football. You've got Bucks and Texans to kick things off earlier in the evening. And the Texans are 0-1, but they're still probably the favorites to repeat in the AFC South. And the Buccaneers, with that comeback win against the Falcons in week one, they're on the road in Houston. And so we've got a good doubleheader on Monday Night Football. It all starts tonight, though, with Thursday Night Football. The Commanders on the road taking on the Packers. The Packers flexed a little bit against the Lions last week. And then the Commanders, they go 1-0 as well. So it's a pretty big heavyweight matchup in Thursday Night Football tonight with two 1-0 teams. We'll talk to our buddy PJ Glasser about that game coming up in our next segment and all of that. I got to tell you, there aren't always great Thursday Night Football games. This one tonight is going to be really good.
Yeah, it's going to learn a lot about it. The Commanders had a lot of questions if they're going to be good enough to be what they were last year, obviously going all over the NFC Championship game. So a big test for them right off the bat if Jaden Daniels and company can get it done. We get to watch Bill Kroski Merritt tonight, fantasy legend for some reason. Everybody loves him. So yeah, really excited to kick it underway. Just excited that football season is back. I got the routine getting ready. Just signed up for Sunday Ticket the other day.
All right.
We're going to get all the games on Sunday. So I may have to invest in the Red Zone package as well.
Yeah.
So I can get that. I'm a big Red Zone guy.
I love Red Zone. I watch it all the time. I don't love that they've implemented commercials now into Red Zone. I'm like, the whole reason I'm paying more for YouTube TV is so I don't have to watch commercials while I'm getting all my NFL headlines and highlights on Sundays, but it is what it is. That's the name of the game today. So we're here. It's week number two, and we're going to get all of the betting insights in our very next segment, beginning with Thursday Night Football tonight, the Commanders and the Packers. Our buddy PJ Glasser is going to join us after this timeout. A big thanks to our friends over at Prairie Fire Coffee. They provide us with coffee every single morning on Sports Daily. TJ is going to need it moving forward as he helps take over here on Sports Daily in the future. So we appreciate Prairie Fire's support of the program. PJ Glasser, our betting insider, on the other side. Don't go away. Sports Daily coming right back.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland joining us, PJ Glasser, our betting insider here on the program today. And PJ, I got to tell you, we're through week one of the NFL season. We're through a couple of weeks of the college football season. My bank account is not looking very good right now. I've not had a good start to the betting season. Hopefully week number two of the NFL will turn things around. I feel like you've probably done a little bit better than I have.
You know, week one, Tommy, NFL, week one, week two of college, they're tough because we don't know these teams yet. You know, we're all going off projection or maybe what we saw last year and things like that. So I think there's a lot of opportunity betting live in-game. You know, as a Ravens fan, I've seen them blow a lot of big leads. So I was betting Buffalo live in the Sunday night game, and it ended up working out for me. So, you know, obviously you want to pick winners from the start, and you want to pick these games on their initial lines. But early on in the season, too, there's a lot of value in betting these teams live, and you can get some really good numbers for teams to come back and cover spreads.
That's the good old emotional fade there, PJ. You bet against your team live, and you'll win either way.
Exactly. You guys know it. That's right. Yep. So that's what I was doing on Sunday. And, you know, it helps winning money, but it still hurts as a fan losing a game like that.
Yeah, that was I was thinking of you on Sunday night when Josh Allen and Buffalo comes all the way back and takes down the Ravens. Let's get into Thursday Night Football. First thing on the slate this weekend, we've got two 1-0 teams facing off, Commanders and Packers. I think the Packers flexed a little bit in week one, showing that they probably are a legitimate contender for a championship after taking down Detroit. The Commanders also go 1-0 to start their season. Right now, Green Bay, they're 3.5 home favorites in this game. Anything that stands out to you, what do you like in this game?
Yeah, I like the Packers, you guys. I like the Packers -3.5. I think they're going to roll tonight. Washington, the worst game that they played last season was probably when they had to go on the road in a Thursday night game and play Philadelphia. Jaden Daniels really struggled in that game. McLaurin didn't have a catch. Their defense couldn't really stop Saquon. on the ground. And Green Bay, you know, I kind of want to bet them early on in the season when vibes are high right now. People are still feeling the effects of the Micah Parsons trade. And offensively, you know, I still think they have some things that they can improve on. But again, Washington doesn't have all that great of a defense. And we know Thursday night football, usually teams that are home have a big advantage. Matt LaFleur, his track record, normally very good on short weeks. So I still think that because Washington was so good against the spread last season and sports books and odds makers were so wrong on them, it's kind of like the effect of Indiana football from last year. Like, you were so wrong on them from a year ago, you want to overcorrect and maybe some lines aren't what they should be. I feel like this game should be closer to Packers minus five, Packers minus, you know, 5.5, somewhere in that range. So I do like Green Bay tonight, and I'm laying the 3.5 with the Packers.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. I'll ask you about this Commanders team. I'm not sure if you're a big fantasy sicko like we are as well, but Bill Kroski Merritt's been taking the world by storm for some reason. Who is going to be the integral part of this Commanders offense? You know, who do you look at to have some good props tonight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Jaden Daniels' pass attempts is my favorite prop that I like from the Washington side, because I think what they're going to do to eliminate the Packers' pass rush is they will try and run it, but a lot of times what Kingsbury likes to do is go 4 or 5 wide receivers and just let Jaden play playmaker and just kind of get the ball out of his hands quick and have that extension of the run game. So I think looking at his pass attempts is probably my favorite bet that I would make for like a Washington player tonight. That's at 31.5. If you're just looking at a player, I don't really want to touch the Washington run game because it's still a work in progress. They got rid of Brian Robinson Jr. in the offseason. Eckler at this point in his career is not a 3-down guy, but he's still their number one. Bill, who you mentioned, TJ, that's probably, he's like the fantasy darling right now, the guy that everybody wants to see. But I think Eckler is going to be the guy who gets the majority of the run game, I would probably say at this point, or the snaps between the rushing and the receiving. I think Zach Ertz would probably be the guy that I would look at tonight, maybe like an anytime touchdown prop for Ertz. But Jaden Daniels' pass attempts, if I had to bet something prop for Washington, that's what I would look at.
We saw in the very first game that the Packers played that Micah Parsons was on a little bit of a pitch count, didn't play the whole game against Detroit, but made an impact when he was in the game. Assuming that he's able to do more in week number two as they kind of ease him in with that back injury and take it slowly with him, do you think from a Green Bay perspective defensively, that by itself will help hold down the Commanders' total point total?
Yeah, definitely, definitely will. I mean, look, when you have a quarterback like Jaden Daniels, who is a dual threat guy and is obviously a great athlete, having one of the best athletes on the other side in Micah Parsons is a big advantage. So I definitely think that does help. And again, as you know, Parsons plays more games and he practices more with Green Bay, he's going to get more comfortable in their defense. I would expect him to play a little bit more tonight. But yeah, I'm high on this Packers team and I'm high on this Packers defense. I looked at Green Bay's roster this offseason, you guys, and there was a lot of good with Green Bay, but there was nothing that was great, right? Like, they had no superstars at any position, and now they have a superstar at one of the most important positions in the NFL, and Parsons obviously one of the better pass rushers in the league. So I already thought their defense was pretty good, and now you add him, and it should be the upside of being potentially really good. And they held down a really good Lions offense to 6 points. And I think on a short week, they can keep the Commanders offense to probably under 20, 17 points again tonight.
Yeah, PJ, I'll switch us over to Sunday afternoon. Obviously, that Chiefs-Eagles game, the Super Bowl rematch that everybody's going to be paying attention to. Patrick Mahomes as a home underdog. I think is that the second time in his career is what my math is telling me. I'm not sure if you have that stat or not. It's weird to see the Chiefs as underdogs in Arrowhead Stadium.
It is, guys, and that's what makes this a tough handicap, you know, because I keep going back and forth. It's like, are we really going to do this where we fade Mahomes as a home dog? The Chiefs aren't usually dogs, as you were mentioning. On the flip side, though, I think the reason I'm leaning towards the Eagles in this game is the thinking of, oh, well, the Chiefs can't go 0-2, right? I mean, that can't happen. Like, I can't imagine the Chiefs going 0-2. So that thinking, that part of it, makes me want to go with the Eagles a little bit. And also just watching the Philly-Dallas game, you guys, if there's one way to attack this Eagles defense, it's the other corner. Whoever Quinyon Mitchell is guarding, you just go to the other guy. And obviously right now, one of the big issues that the Chiefs have is their wide receiver core is all banged up. Rice has the suspension. Worthy got hurt in the Chargers game. Hollywood had a nice game, but he also dropped some passes. Kelsey was a non-factor outside of one catch. Juju Smith-Schuster is kind of like your possession receiver type guy. So I just look at the Chiefs receiving core right now, and it's like the way that you can attack this Eagles defense is the opposite corner of Mitchell. Jalen Carter obviously didn't play that game, which would help the Eagles defense as well. So I'm leaning towards Philly in this game. That's probably who my bet will be. It's not one of my favorite plays of the week, but I just think, you know, that part of it and people thinking, well, the Chiefs can't go 0-2, right? I mean, they can't. They're not going to go 0-1 when it's like, well, yeah. I mean, they could. They're home dogs for a reason. So I think I like Philly in the game.
On the other side of the field with Jalen Hurts, you know, when you look at what Justin Herbert was able to do to the Chiefs in week number one, not only with his arm, but with his legs as well. Now the Chiefs are facing a guy that can do that better than Justin Hurts can in Jalen Hurts. Do you think that there's an opportunity there from a props perspective for Hurts to have a big day?
You know, guys, it's a great point, Tommy, and it's going to be interesting what the Eagles' game plan was. As I mentioned earlier in the segment, I'm a Ravens fan, so I've seen Greg Roman call plenty games. I thought he was fantastic on Friday night in Brazil, right? We all thought the Chargers were going to come out, establish Shamarion Hampton, maybe use Najee Harris a little bit, run the football, and they just came out and they were throwing with Herbert, and the O-line held up really well, and Herbert was making great decisions. And now you kind of have a similar team, right? The Eagles, who are a run-first team, but they have these weapons on the outside and a very good quarterback, and is Philly just going to say, we're just going to do what the Chargers do? They all think we're going to line up and run Barkley, but A.J. Brown only had one catch in the first game. Let's use him. Devontae Smith didn't really do much, so it'll be really interesting. Do the Eagles just stick to their bread and butter, or do they look at the tape from that Chargers game and use some of that? I kind of think they might use some of the Chargers tape, and they might lean on Jalen Hurts a little bit more. So people might be down on A.J. Brown. You could get a discounted price on him and Devontae Smith because of what their numbers were in that first game. But I don't know how you don't watch what the Chargers did on film and try to replicate that same game plan. So Hurts should be a factor. Maybe look at his pass completions a little bit. And then I would look at Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown. I do think Philly's going to throw the ball more than we think, just like the Chargers did.
PJ, you brought this up. The Chiefs wide receiver room basically has nobody in it except for Hollywood Brown at this point, between a Rashee Rice suspension and a Hollywood Xavier Worthy injury. That's been the question we've been talking about all week, is who's going to catch the passes for this team after Hollywood Brand? Is it, you know, Tyquan Thornton? Is it Juju Smith-Schuster? Mahomes, I'm looking at it, his passing line still at about 250. Like, do you think that the Chiefs are going to do that? Like, they think they handed the ball off 10 times last week. Are they going to do that again this week, or are they going to have to adjust?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, it's a great thing you got Andy Reid as your head coach, because if you need somebody to adjust on the fly and create a game plan, Big Red's the guy that I would want. So I think they figured it out. Guys, I love Tyquan Thornton, longest reception over 16 and a half yards, right? How many times did we see Mahomes bomb it to him down the field? They did miss some deep connections, but again, you watch that Philly-Dallas game. CeeDee Lamb makes a couple of those catches on those long passes, man, and they win that game. So there is opportunity to hit Philly down the field, and Thornton's their deep threat, especially now with kind of the state of their receiving room and how many guys that they have. So you are going to see a good mix of run and pass. I think they are going to try and control the game a little bit. Don't want to put too much on Mahomes' shoulders, but when they do throw it, if you're looking for a receiving prop, guys, I kind of like Tyquan Thornton, longest reception over.
There are some pretty great matchups in the NFL this weekend. Another one coming up, it's in the early window on Sunday. Another divisional matchup in back-to-back weeks, the Bears and the Lions. One of these two teams is going to go 0-2 in the NFC North. Right now, everything is favoring the Lions. They're 6.5-point favorites from what I can tell. I mean, clearly this looks to be kind of a bounce-back spot for Detroit. However, Chicago put up a really great fight against the Vikings and very nearly won that game just the other night.
They did. Guys, great stat for you. Dan Campbell, 10-0 against the spread off of a straight-up loss. So wow. If there was a coach that you wanted off of a loss, it is Dan Campbell. His teams normally bounce back in these kind of spots. I think the interesting handicap about this game is when you look at what the Lions and Bears did in week one, is it more of a takeaway of how they looked, or is it more of a takeaway of their opponent, right? So when you watch the Lions, was that game more about just how good the Packers are, or was it more about the Lions and all their issues that they thought we might have with both coordinators and Goff maybe not being as great? Look, Goff's great indoors. He's great at home. I just mentioned the stat about how good Campbell usually is off of a loss. And even though I think Ben Johnson did some good things and will help Caleb throughout the season, there's still a big learning curve there. And Caleb's just not quite where the Bears need him to be at the start of the season going into year two. So divisional game. The Bears played Detroit really tough in Detroit last year on Thanksgiving, but I like the Lions on Sunday. I'd probably lay the six with them.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game there. Another one that I had talked to Tommy about before we came on the air here in this block, the Seahawks-Steelers game. Everybody talked about that Steelers one after they won this past week of Aaron Rodgers getting the first win as a Steeler. They're home favorites in this one. Do you think that was, like you just talked about, is that the Steelers being good last week, or is it the Jets being bad last week?
I think it's more of the Jets, guys. Seattle's one of my favorite bets this week, especially at plus three. I think they win that game outright. Seattle under Mike McDonald last year won 7 games on the road. They only won 3 at home. We think of Seattle as this team with this unbelievable home field advantage, and normally they are, but they've actually been better on the road the last couple years, and certainly were last season as well. Keep in mind, Mike McDonald was the defensive coordinator for the Ravens before taking the head coaching job in Seattle. So very familiar with Mike Tomlin, the Steelers, how his defense is going to want to attack his offense. He's going to know ways to attack that Steeler offense as well. So I just like Seattle in these spots. And I think there's kind of this stigma that, like, when these West Coast teams go on the road and they have to travel across country because they play, you know, 10 a.m. local kicks, they have a big disadvantage. Guys, it's actually been the opposite recent years. Like, you want to bet these West Coast teams that have to play these East Coast games. They're normally the teams covering the spread and winning the games outright. So I think it's a nice bounce back spot for Seattle. Lose a tough divisional game at home. Jets are feeling good after that big win. You saw how much it meant to Rodgers to beat the Jets organization. I like Seattle in that spot. I'd take them plus three, and I'd take some money line too.
Real quick, with the couple minutes we have left, let's cram in college football really quickly here, PJ. So the game that we're following closely here locally, Kansas State going out west to take on Arizona. It's been pretty much a disaster so far this season for the Wildcats. That's the big game we're following. But there are some major top 25 matchups as well. Texas A&M, Notre Dame, that's on the slate this weekend. Georgia, Tennessee in the SEC. So the game that we're following locally and also some of the bigger games, what are your favorite bets?
So Kansas State, I like them this week, you guys, against Arizona. A lot of the professional bettors are definitely on K-State this week. Arizona opened up, I believe, like a -2, -2.5 point favorite, and we've seen nothing but Kansas State money come in early in the week. And for a line to move 2.5, 3 points, like, that is professional money coming in on K-State. It obviously hasn't looked pretty to start the season. They very easily could be 0-3 right now. But to be favored in a game against Arizona, short week, I think K-State's the right side. So I do like them in the game at -115. As for some of the marquee matchups that we have, guys, I think some of these lines are getting out of control. Like, the fact that Clemson is only -3 at Georgia Tech and Georgia's only -3.5 at Tennessee, I think are two major overcorrections. Clemson was down 16-0 against Troy last week in the first half. I just think that was all about the major letdown after the LSU game. And Georgia Tech, I think, is a terrible matchup for – I think Clemson is a terrible matchup for Georgia Tech, because the way that Georgia Tech's offense wants to move the ball is they want to run, and they want to run with their quarterback who's hurt and might not even play in this game. I just think they're going to have a tough time moving the ball against that Clemson defensive line. So I like Clemson -3. And then I also like Georgia. You guys, that look-ahead line was Georgia -7. It's all the way down to -3.5. Think about this. Kirby Smart is 0-10 against the spread against FCS schools, and he's now 1-14 against the spread when he plays FBS teams as a favorite of 38 points or more. all Georgia did the first 2 weeks is what they always do under Kirby Smart. They never cover the spreads in those games. They never look impressive. They save everything for SEC play. And they've beaten Tennessee straight, eight straight times. They've covered six straight games against the Vols. I just think you're getting a discounted price because Tennessee's looked good against some bad teams and Georgia hasn't. But it's like, okay, fine. What did they do in these games? And Kirby has dominated Josh Heupel in Tennessee. So I think you're getting some nice discounted prices on Clemson and Georgia. I'd buy the dip and lay it with both of those teams.
Well, it's going to be an exciting weekend, both in the college world and in the NFL. It starts tonight with Thursday Night Football. PJ, we're up against it. We appreciate your time today.
Yep. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
All right. There goes PJ Glasser, our betting insider. And some good stuff there, some good stats as far as what to bet this weekend. We talked a little bit about K-State in that segment. We'll get more into the Wildcats. Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, joins us next. Don't go away. It's Sports Daily coming right back.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on KFH. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland, our buddy Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com joining us now. Fitz, I think that I've been trying to, you know, for the last couple days, been thinking to myself, how do I want to start this segment with you? What's the right question to ask about what's been going on with Kansas State football? And I think I finally narrowed it down. And the question simply is, what the hell?
I think that's a similar thought with most of the fan base right now. This one's hard to explain. This is a really talented team, but there's a missing ingredient here. And I think it's just locker room leadership, and I don't think the coaches have done a good job either. And they just don't play with any extra fire. It seems to they're very mechanical in some ways of how they go about business, particularly on defense. And it's frustrating to watch because this hasn't been typical of K-State football in a very, very long time.
It's almost a reverse parabola whenever you cover a team, is that whenever they're really, really good, they're awesome to cover, and it's like must-see TV whenever you watch them play, and then when they get more to like the, you know, 7-5 range, it's kind of the bottom of the parabola, but then whenever they're really struggling, that's when the real interesting coverage comes out. You agree with that sentiment?
Yeah. You really, in times of trouble, you start digging for reasons. I've gone through that quite a bit with basketball. Yep. Try to figure out, diagnose what's going on. Football's different because I've always said this, that it's like a 12-chapter story, and each chapter is really more meaningful than, say, one or two basketball games. And it tells a lot about your team and the season, and I think this is a really important chapter. This going into an off week will really set a tone. If they can find a way to win and play better, I think they'll go into their off week with a head of steam, and maybe it'll be productive for the rest of the year. I really do fear if they lose this is going to be pretty much what the season is, an underperforming team with talent and no real competitive spirit that can be found.
It was one of the more interesting, I guess is the word that you could use, press conferences after the game on Saturday with Chris Klieman, where, you know, clearly he was frustrated. Clearly he was upset. He still defended his team, said he likes the team, all of that. And there, I think, were mixed sentiments about his demeanor, his tone, all of that after the press conference. How did you feel? I know you were there. I know you were asking questions. How did you feel immediately following that press conference after the game?
I think he's confused.
Yeah.
I think he's searching for what's going on with his team. To the point where he's got into the reflex of defending them. I think the phrase that really got him sideways with fans was he said, I'm proud of my guys.
Yeah.
And I don't think he meant it the way it came out. I think my daily delivery video is on this today. I think he really meant I still love my guys, which is different, but more clarifying that I'm sticking with them. We're here together. He wasn't proud of their overall performance, I'm sure. I mean, how could you be? But, you know, I think this team's just missing guys to make definitive plays. That, you know, everything the Army quarterback was in this game is everything K-State's missing on both sides of the ball.
Fitz, we talked about, Brandon and I talked about on our Sports Sunday show over on KWCH, is that it's not crazy to think about, which is, you don't want to be the guy that's saying that the world is on fire and the sky is falling down, but the fact of the matter is whenever you lose to Army and you almost lose to North Dakota, you look at the rest of the schedule and who's the easy win at that point, you know? You probably had UCF circled, you probably had like an Oklahoma State type of thing, but Oklahoma State in a hypothetical situation, they're going to be favored against Army, they're going to be heavy favored against North Dakota. Like, the panic meter's at a 10 right now for K-State fans. Like, is it just to say that it's a 10?
I agree that fans are, I think they have shifted now after the loss from pure bewilderment to, hell, let's see what happens. And that's bad for a program when your fans so quickly arrive at, well, if they don't play like they give a crap, why should I give a crap? And that's the way it comes across. The one thing I really dispute with Coach Klein, and then we got into it over the squib kick, onside kick thing, a little heated after the game, mostly because I was right. But the one thing I just don't think he can find the button to push, and maybe there isn't one.
Yeah,
and maybe the kids, the players, have to push this themselves. And he's finding out that they don't have that dude. They don't have the Brendan Mott was the dude last year who set an example on every down of how hard to play. They were really pretty good in a mechanical way against Army. I mean, they were in the right spots. They never gave up big runs. They didn't get fooled. They just weren't attacking at all. So instead of a one-yard loss, it was a 2-3-yard gain. I mean, they averaged 3.4 yards a carry, and they almost ran for 3.4 yards every carry. And I just kept picking up first downs because K-State just was never in attack mode. They were on their heels the entire game. And I've never seen anything like it. I mean, Army put out a tweet that 13 plays is the lowest number of plays in the last 15 years in college football for a team and a half. When I ran through AI, because this is not a record they typically keep, when I ran through AI, they couldn't find any post-World War II. But even if it's 15 years, that's a long stretch of time. I didn't have hair 15 years ago, but I still could remember it. And that's 13 plays and a half, guys. And consider that Army had the last possession of the first half. So they essentially had the ball for 30 out of the final 33 minutes of the game. Just playing keep away. It was Army football to the nth degree. And it was, if you enjoy football, if you're an old school person, you know, in terms of your football tastes, it was a beautiful thing to watch, even if it was your team happened to be on the other end of it.
Yeah, if you're on the other side, it can be maddening. It definitely was maddening and frustrating for the Wildcats and the entire fan base when, you know, they never were able to really touch the ball and make anything happen. And I think it shows that, you know, when you play a team like Army and they're going to play ball control, it's that essential that you make the most of each play you have offensively, mm-hmm. because there's never any guarantee that you're going to get the ball back. I want to get your take on this. I've seen, you know, everything on social media from the sky is falling to blow the program up to, you know, all these different declarations and all of that. One thing that has stuck with me a little bit, and I've seen it from a few different people on social media, is this sentiment that Avery Johnson deserves better. I've seen that a lot. I've seen that from a lot of different people that, you know, he's your coveted star quarterback. He's your guy that, you know, is going to or should lead your team to a ton of victories and a new level of success and all of that. And in the first three games of the season, we haven't been able to see that from him. And I don't necessarily believe that really it's all his fault. Like, a lot of it's play calling, a lot of it's, you know, different things like that. What's your takeaway on that opinion that's coming out of the fan base right now?
Well, they recruited one of the best dual threat quarterback prospects in a very long time from this region, not just the state. And I decided he needs to be a pocket passer.
Yeah.
This makes no sense to me. You get to the end of the game and K-State ran like 46 plays in the entire game. Avery Johnson ran the ball 3 times. What?
Yeah.
What? I mean, the play calling to start halves is so safe that it's just painful to watch.
Well, and especially when they're without Dylan Edwards, right? Like, you don't have your main threat running the football. So why not try to unlock your quarterback's ability to do that?
And, you know, maybe as the offensive line gets guys back, they'll become better run blockers. They're just not very good run blocking guys. Their stats and pass blocking are pretty good. And I argue that part of that is they have a really mobile quarterback could avoid sacks.
Yeah.
But their pass blocking is, you know, according to PFF, among the best in the country. And their run blocking is total nonsense, really inconsistent.
Fitz, I'll ask you this. I'll ask you this. You know, talking about what we're seeing on social media, obviously K-State fans think the sky has fallen and everything like that. And I don't want to add fuel to the fire or anything like that, but they're talking about what you do when your team does struggle. You talk about coaches getting canned and everything like that. This is a coaching staff that, for the most part, we'll just say Coach Klieman, won a Big 12 title 3 years ago. Like, what's the biggest difference between the coaching staff of that year to this year? Because, I mean, is it Colin Klein? Is it Connor Riley? Like, can you pinpoint anybody that makes us a different team?
Will Howard. Will Howard was the competitor. And I think we took that for granted looking back. I think you still make the trade, essentially, of Will going to Ohio State and promoting Avery. But you don't do it and then not let Avery be Avery. And I understand you got to protect him. I understand you don't want to run him like Colin Klein. He doesn't have that physical build. But you are taking out the threat of him running. You're voluntarily taking one of your most important pieces off the table, that at least if you run him enough, they have to account for him. They're getting to the point now where they don't even look for the quarterback power. They know that K-State's not going to run him between the tackles. They just know it, and they don't need to defend that. And that's horrible scheming. You know, that's just you got to put all that out there and make people prepare for things. And quit being safe with your play calling. You're now 1-2. Your back's against the wall. You've scored most of your touchdowns getting the ball downfield. Go attack a team. Go attack them.
Yeah, they got to turn the page quickly, Fitz. Tomorrow night, taking on Arizona out west. They've got to try to figure something out very quickly. We're up against it real quick. Anything big over at GoPowerCat.com?
Just compressed schedule for podcast. So the pregame show came out yesterday. Our Friday walkthrough premieres at 10 on YouTube. Just get on over and enjoy the coverage.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, Fitz. You can follow him on social at Life of Fitz. We appreciate it, my friend, and we'll talk more next week.
Thank you.
All right. There goes Tim Fitzgerald. Don't go away. We've got more Sports Daily coming right back.
Now, from from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to Sports Daily on this Thursday morning. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland in for Jacob Albrock today. We appreciate you joining us on this Thursday edition of the show. So many different ways for you to get in touch with the program today. You can give us a call on the KFH hotline, 869-1240. You can also leave us your video comments. We are simulcasting our program on our video stream on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Also simulcasting on the 12 News Connected app as well. You can leave us your video comments there. We can put them right up on the screen as the show goes on. And you can also leave us a voice message. All you have to do is listen to the show on the free Odyssey app. You can click the microphone button right there on the homepage, and you'll be able to leave us. It's basically a voicemail. We can play those back on the show as well. So a multitude of different ways for you to get in touch with the program today. We've got a lot coming up on the program today. TJ, I told you this right before we came on the air. Today is a monumental show. It's the 25th anniversary of Sports Daily. It launched on September 11th, which I know is an unfortunate date, but September 11th in the year 2000. And so today we celebrate 25 years of this program.
Yeah, been a lot of great guys on this show, a lot of great guests, and a lot of great topics on Sports Daily. So I'm really excited that I get to be a part of that a little bit. But yeah, 25 years. The show is officially older than me. I don't know if you want to hear that or not, Tommy.
Wait, you're not 25?
I am 24, about to turn 25.
Holy cow. I thought you were older than that.
24 years old.
God, you're a youngin'.
I'm a baby.
Man, so, you know, there have been so many different great moments on this program over the last 25 years. So many great people have hosted this show over the 25 years. You know, top of mind, obviously, Bruce Hurdle and Bob Lutz. You know, they really set the tone for this program for such a long time. And then many other people obviously have been in these host chairs. We're coming up on my final week regularly on this program. You and Brandon Zenner will be taking over for me after next week. And so my 3-year tenure on this show is coming to a close in the next few days or so, which is bittersweet for me, but we'll get into the next era, the next generation of this program. But so many great moments, and I also want to point this out too, as we're talking about the history and the legacy of Sports Daily. We had there was a lot of news yesterday, as many people know, a lot of different things going on around the country today. And in case anybody missed this news locally, a friend of the program and a friend to many here in Wichita passed away yesterday. Bucky Walters, at the age of 86. Bucky, a longtime fixture icon in the Wichita comedy scene. He was in the Gridiron Show with our buddy Ted the Sports Head for a number of years. He called us on this program to talk the Shockers all the time. Bucky had been sick for a while and passed away yesterday at the age of 86. So we have an anniversary. We have a little bit of a sad note to pass along here on the top of the show. But we don't have anything monumental to bring you today on the 25th anniversary. It's going to be a regular show as normal because we have a lot to get to. The Royals, they get the win last night in comeback fashion. They had to have it in Cleveland. We'll get into that in our very next segment. In our next hour, we'll talk to our betting insider, PJ Glasser, on best bets this weekend in the NFL world, college football, all of that. We'll do that in our next hour. And we'll talk to Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com. I don't know about you, TJ, but I am really interested to hear what Fitz has to say after the start to the K-State season. I would imagine there'll be some fireworks on this segment with Fitz.
Yeah, I know last week we talked to him, and it was kind of like, you know, Fitz never tiptoes around anything, but it was the fact of like, yeah, like they didn't look very good. Like maybe they'll figure it out. Like I don't want to say anything too harsh. And then it's like, oh, everything that we said came true. Like we weren't wrong about anything. They lost to Army. So
yeah,
lots to talk about.
Yeah, the sky might be falling in Manhattan. So we'll talk to Fitz about that as well in our next hour. That is all What's on Tap. What's on Tap is brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring the Pep Pep Pepperoni Pizza that's topped with sliced, cubed, and deli cut pepperoni. Pep Pep Pepperoni is now available in a lunch or full size at Wichita Brewing Company Pizza and beer made here. TJ, I just can't get over the fact that you're younger than this program is. I'm having a hard time getting that out of my head. So you were born in 2001?
March 2001, yep.
March 2001.
I've been the brunt of many jokes in the newsroom. I've worked there for almost 4 years, and I think I'm still, like, the youngest employee in the newsroom. Like, people keep coming in that are just my age or older. There might be, like, one or two younger than me now. But I started at KOH when I was 20, and so there was a lot,
wow,
a lot of brunt jokes of, you know, I can report on the news, but I can't go drink a beer afterwards, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those days are done, obviously, yeah, because you're over 21.
True.
Man, I was all excited to talk about the 25th anniversary of this program, and
think about what we were doing in the year 2000.
Yeah, because I mean I was in high school. I'm 39. I'm that much older than you. I was in high school in the year 2000, and you were not even born yet. Gosh, that makes me feel incredibly, incredibly
really
old.
Good at doing that to people.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, of course, it's been, like I mentioned, a long time on this program, and we really, really appreciate all of the listeners from all the way dating back to the year 2000, all the way through that have made this show continue. It is, at least by my count, unofficially, the longest running sports program in Wichita continuously. It doesn't happen very often when you have a franchise that runs this long uninterrupted on one radio station. And so a tip of the cap to Tony Dusing, our brand manager, operations manager here with KFH and Odyssey, for continuing to champion for local Wichita sports talk radio. And I'm happy to know that once I leave the program next week, that the show continues to roll on. Of course, our buddy Jacob Albrecht will continue to anchor the show, but having you and Brandon Zinner rotate through on multiple days and get a couple days a week, I think is a great next step forward for the show.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. We're really excited about it. Definitely getting me out of bed a lot earlier. Everybody knows what happened last week. We don't need to talk about it. But
yeah.
I was up raring to go this morning. Gonna turn into a morning person here. Somehow.
Are you going to have to manage, I don't know on the days on which you're doing the program, but are you going to have to manage doing the late news and then turning around and coming in early for the show?
Yes. So the way we're going to stagger it is that I have Mondays and Tuesdays off from TV, so I'm going to have Mondays and Tuesdays off from radio. But it's going to be like last night. I worked until about 10:30, 11, got home, went to bed, was up this morning with my wife at about 5:45.
Is that discipline there for you, like where like you know you're going to be working a late night? And then you just like, I know I have to go to bed, like, right. Or is it, I'm going to get home and I might play some PlayStation.
No, I can't do that. Like I scroll my phone a little bit because, you know, sometimes we're working in a newsroom, gets the adrenaline pumping and you can't go to bed. But I definitely make myself at least try to go to bed. So
yeah.
I'm going to have to be better about that.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun. I'm glad that we have both of you guys to be able to rotate through and be able to continue on this program with Jacob, who will of course be on every single day. So we're celebrating an anniversary here, 25 years of Sports Daily today, and we're getting ready for the next era of the program coming up after next week. We are just getting underway here on Sports Daily. On the other side, let's get into the Royals. They rally, they come back late in the game, a game they had to have against the Guardians. We'll get into all of that next. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland, just getting started on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make
yes.
a difference, that can
yes.
get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Shocker Nation is painting the Kansas State Fair black and yellow on Saturday, September 13th. For Shocker Saturday at the Kansas State Fair in Hutch, we're airing a special show live and on-site at the fairgrounds with Wichita State AD Kevin Saul and head coaches Terry Nooner, Brian Green, Christy Breadbinner, and Chris Lamb. Tune in live to KFH on 97.5 and 1240, or check it out in person live from the House of Capper at the Kansas State Fairgrounds this coming Saturday. Our very own Jacob Albrecht will be co-hosting with Mike Kennedy, the voice of of the Shockers, and Kevin Saul for that big Shocker Saturday at the Kansas State Fair. So looking forward to that this weekend up there in Hutch. If you're in the area, you want to come out to the fair, make sure to stop by the House of Capper and check that out. Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland on this Thursday. Let's dive right into the Royals, TJ. It was an up-and-down, roller-coaster-type game. Crucial game, must-win game for Kansas City. It started off well. We see Jonathan India drive in a run, and you're like, okay, the Royals get out in front here pretty early on, feel okay about it, and then Kyle Manzardo, who is the Royals' killer this season,
torched him all year.
He doesn't do well against any other team, but he does really well against the Royals. He hits a home run, and the Guardians take the lead, and it was tense. You know, Jacob likes to call it butt puckering time or nut cutting time, whatever phrase you want to use. It was definitely at that point for the Royals, middle of the game. And then it kind of came from an unlikely source to an extent. Nick Lofton is really the guy that got everything going. He was able to drive in the tying run, and then he scored the go-ahead run. And the Royals are able to win 4-3 on the road in Cleveland. From a wild card perspective, you can't afford to have further ground between you and Cleveland and the teams ahead of you in the wild card race. It was a game they had to have, and especially in a bullpen game when you have Jonathan Bolin getting the start and you run through six different relievers. I think the Royals have to walk away from that game feeling fortunate they got the W.
Yeah, it's huge. Obviously, in the middle of a race is the Guardians. Right now, as it stands, Guardians are a half game ahead of them. So losing that game is going to be pretty detrimental, as you're going to fall down to four and a half back. And then you're sitting there with the Rays, and then you have a bigger mountain to climb higher to get into that wild card. So as I said, this is a crucial stretch. I think there's 16 games left of the year. You know, like, not to be dramatic, but you might have to win 12 of them at this point. Like, you're kind of swimming upstream. You can't afford any losses. So last night's huge. I don't know if it's going to be enough, though. That's the thing. Do you think that they still have a chance to get in?
You know, it's going to be really difficult because of the way the last 4 or 5 days have gone. You go back to Saturday after the Royals game. The Mariners played late. So before the Mariners game started and after the Royals won, the Royals were only a half game back of the Mariners at that moment. Then the Mariners win. And then the Royals are one game back. Then the Royals lose on Sunday. They lose on Monday. They lose on Tuesday. And then all of a sudden, the Mariners keep winning. The Rangers are hot right now. They're winning as well. And there's more distance between them and the third wildcard spot. They're on the brink, for sure. It's really, really tense right now, for sure. But they're not out of it. And if you think of it from the perspective of a magic number, the Royals have 74 wins right now. They have 16 games remaining in their season. It's they're not going to go 16-0, so you can cross 90 wins off the list. That's not going to happen for them. But then you start thinking, okay, if they get to 85, is that going to be enough? If that's 13 wins, right? No, it's 12 wins.
Yep.
It's 11 wins to get from where 74 to get to 85.
Yep,
that's 11 wins. Will 85 wins be enough? I don't know. Will 86 wins be enough? That's 12-4. 87 may have to be. So you have to try to figure out what the winning win total will be to make it into that third wild card spot. And then the question becomes, do the Royals have enough gas to get that done?
I don't even know if that's the right way to look at it either, because you think about the schedule that they have coming up. The bad part about this is that they're only going to play two teams that are in the chase of this thing. You know, the Blue Jays, have the Blue Jays clinched yet? I think they have.
I don't know if they've clinched. I know they're close.
Okay, they're about to at least.
Yeah.
They've got Cleveland tonight. Then they go to Philadelphia. Then the Mariner series is the big one. Then it's Blue Jays, Angels, A's. So you got to take care of business tonight, get that series done against the Guardians. And then you have to just, you might have to sweep the Mariners to have a chance. Like, the wins against Philadelphia and the A's are kind of going to be useless down the stretch. And then even if you do that, if you win those four big games that you have to win that are left for you to get in this wild card race, it still might not be enough because the Rangers could get hot. So that's just the name of the game. I think that the Royals may have damned themselves already. They proved me wrong. I thought they damned themselves back in July, but they've been in the stretch the entire time, but just kind of on the outside looking in. So I don't know if I'm a pessimist. I don't know if it's the Royals fan in me my entire life that's telling me that they might not be able to get it done, but I think it's too much of a tall ask. If they do, it'd be awesome, and I'd love to cover some postseason baseball, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Let's say they just miss out. Let's say they're on the outside looking in. What would your feelings be on this team? Are you negative about the team? Like, do you feel like it was a missed opportunity for them? Or do you have a different reaction about the way the season could be summed up?
I don't know. I think that historically looking at it, it's obviously a good year because we've seen so much bad Royals baseball. But then you look at what they did last year and how much they brought back and invested to go back to the playoffs this year. And the fact that like they had the opportunity as they were looking outside in at the trade deadline and said, nope, we're going to keep going. Like, we're going to buy. And you still don't make the playoffs. Like, they didn't spend that much to buy, so it's not that big of a deal. I don't know. You think about, like, you could have dumped off Lugo. He has been kind of, you know, not great since the extension. We've talked about that. I don't know. There's a lot of different pieces that go into this. I don't think it's going to be the end of the world if they just barely miss out. I'd obviously like it a lot more if they made it in. But if they don't make it this year, I think that you have to make it next year, or then it's going to start looking, you know,
well,
you have to make tough decisions.
I think that you have to view Bobby Witt Jr. kind of in the same lens that you view Patrick Mahomes, where as long as you have him, you have a chance. And I know baseball and football are apples and oranges. They're two totally different games. And Bobby Witt Jr. Can't impact the game at the same level every single play that Patrick Mahomes does. So I understand that. That being said, though, I mean, I believe, and I think you believe also, and many people do, that Bobby Witt Jr. is a transformational baseball player, right? Like, he could be a future MVP. He could be a future Hall of Famer, like all these different things. And so I don't feel like the window, even after next season, is closed. I think that they return a lot of players. The core of that team should be back. Really, the only question mark really is Salvador Perez, because there's an option. I would imagine the Royals will pick up that option, I would think. So I don't even think that's that big of a question, but by and large, the core, the nucleus of this team should be returning next season. Now, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Because these guys had stretches where they looked phenomenal, but especially offensively, there were a lot of times where they were flat out anemic. And especially as of late, like, they were hot for a while and then they've kind of fallen off a cliff back and reverted back to the same kind of offense we saw early this season.
Yeah. That's the kind of the question that kind of arises when you think about the Royals' future, is the fact that Vinny Pasquantino and Michael Garcia are both going to need extensions at some point kind of soon. And you're going to have to make a decision on who that's going to be. And the way that the Royals have operated is that you're probably going to have to pick of who you want to keep. But, you know, the way that they've operated the past couple of years, maybe they want to open up the pocketbooks, keep them both. But then the thing is, like you said, you know, the core of who's the core? Let's figure this out. Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Garcia, Cole Reagans, Chris Bubich. Anybody else you want to add to that
list? Probably, I mean, you could probably throw in, I don't know, would you consider Lucas Ersig a core member of that team? Like, if you go bullpen?
Sure, we'll add him too. Yeah. But then after that, it's just like, I mean, if you lose the rest of the team, you know, like, there's nobody in the minor leagues coming up to help. Like, there's no reinforcements on the way. So you've got to keep this core together and hope it works out, because you've got nothing coming up from the farm system. You're going to have to spend money somewhere. You know, it kind of was a perfect storm a little bit last year. I think that it's possible to do it again, because these guys can just get hot as a firecracker. But also, if it's not going well, you know, it's not like the Royals of 2013, 2014, when you knew you had all these guys down there. You had a Yordano Ventura sitting in AAA ready to get the call up. You had Eric Cosmer before he got called up. Moose, when he got called up, they had a really good farm system. Now that's just not the case. There's literally nobody down there anymore except for the two catchers.
Whatever happens this season, I do think that it's a little unfair, and people are going to do this regardless, but I think it's going to be unfair to the Royals to look at their overall season offensive statistics and lump it all together for the overall body of work. This team, as it stands today, is a lot different than what it was on opening day. You know, you had MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfro patrolling the corner outfield spots on opening day. They were an awful offense. They were the worst in Major League Baseball. They're still not great if you look at the overall season hitting stats. But from July 1st onward, and then if you even want to go further than that, if you know, All-Star break on or even trade deadline on, they've been much improved with the reinforcements they bring in. And so I think people from a top-level viewpoint, from 30,000 feet, are just going to look at the overall season stats and say, look at the Royals. They stink offensively. They need to make major changes. Well, they kind of already did. Like, they got rid – I mean, think of all the names. I mentioned it yesterday. All of the names that at one point or another have played outfield for this team, outside of center field, which has been Kyle Isbell's. But you've got Melendez and Renfroe, John Rave, Tyler Tolbert. Now you've got Randall Grichuk. You've got Mike Yastrzemski. You've got, you know, all these different guys. Adam Frazier's played outfield. All these different players have at one point or another been in the outfield, and they've been trying to forever figure out the right combination that works. I am pleased that at least for next season, the majority of that core should return, but they've got to get some of those other areas figured out and locked in.
Yeah, I think the other unfortunate thing that you can take away optimistically is the fact that, like you said, the first half of the season, they were the best pitching staff in the league, and then the second half of the season, I mean, for a stretch, they were one of the best offensive teams in the league, and then it just never coincided with each other between a Cole Reagans injury and a Chris Bubich injury. I think if you did have a healthy pitching staff, you know, a lot of these games down the stretch would look a lot different. You know, obviously, we saw what Chris Bubich was, one of the best pitchers in baseball whenever he was healthy earlier this year. And then we've seen the stretches of Cole Reagans. We've seen the stretches of Seth Lugo, who hasn't been to his performance level that he was in the first half of the season. So if you bring this team back, I think if you replay the 2025 season with the way that it went, I'd say that, you know, maybe 60 times out of 100, the Royals do make the playoffs. And so that's kind of the frustrating part. I think that's the part that hurts the most. But at the end of the day, it's baseball, and the injury bug gets everybody. And I think it's just the way the cards might have felt.
Yeah, we got to talk Jack Caglione a little bit here. Jalen Thompson, our buddy, Royals insider, Kansas City Star, had a phenomenal article that came out last night after the Royals won, where he pinpointed Jack Caglione as the key reason why the Royals came back late in that game. I don't know if you caught this or not, TJ, but Cags came up, and it was in the seventh inning when the Royals were able to tie the ballgame and then take the lead. We all know that what Cags has struggled with the most in the bigs is his patience at the plate, swinging at pitches out of the zone. I think pitchers, at least his first stint, they knew that they could throw it wherever and he was going to take a hack at it. So they never really gave him anything good to hit. And he was extremely patient. And I believe the sequence went, if I read the article right, he took three pitches that were all balls. Then he took two more that were called strikes. And it was a full count. And then he walked on a 3-2 pitch. So he didn't swing the bat at all in that at-bat. And he ended up on base. And then immediately Matt Cotrero goes to the bench, brings in Tyler Tolbert to pinch run for him, and that started the rally, and Nick Lofton was able to drive him in. Then Mikel Garcia drove in Lofton, and the Royals are able to take the lead. And, you know, you're always, and I even led with this when we were first talking about this game. I led with Nick Lofton, and I led with Mikel Garcia. Jalen Thompson argues, and I don't disagree with him, that that whole rally was predicated on the patience at the plate by Jack Caglione. We're going to need to see more of that in his young career.
Yeah, Jack Caglione is just such an enigma, because the fact of, even like, you think about how much he tortured AAA pitching and AA pitching, and then he got called up, and then it wasn't the case, and then he went on his rehab assignment, and then he tortured AAA pitching again. Like, there's something to be said about how many times he's hit hard hit balls at people in the majors, and that's just the game of baseball, and it sucks. But I agree, there's obviously the things that he needs to work on. He's still 22 years old as well. So that's the other part of this. But the argument of Jack Caglione, if you want to think about who he's going to be on this team next year, you know, you think that you want him to be a part of that core. Right now, you know, he's not helping the core that much. Like, that's just the fact. But you can't send him back down to get better at this point. Like, anything that he's going to get better at is at the major league level.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. That's not going to happen.
Exactly. So, like, you just kind of have to roll with the punches and just wait for it to get better, because it should get better. Like, the dude is a generational type of athlete. So, I don't know. Do you take away, like, what is your take on Jack Caglione? What do you think he's going to be next year?
I think he's going to be probably a more complete player. And I think that the Royals will work with him this offseason on, you know, look, we need you to be a core member of this team and not just a guy that we want to hit one over the fence, right? Like, we need you to be a five-tool player. Like, we need you to work in this offseason on getting on base. We need you to work on, you know, especially if he's blocked, and he is at first base for now at least, we need you to work on your outfield. We need you to be able to be a guy that we can count on in all the different facets of the game, not just, hey, we're going to throw you in the lineup and we hope that you're going to hit one out of the park. We need you to do more than that. And I would anticipate that he'll be a more complete player next season.
I'd even argue that if you just put him in to have him hit one out of the park, that'd be awesome as well.
Well, sure.
He hasn't done that very much either.
Sure, yeah.
So, Yeah, it's really, you know, the worst part about the Jack Caglione thing is the fact that this entire time, I know Andy Rogers reported it whenever he got drafted, is that they said that we're going to work on your hitting first, and then once you get that figured out, then we can figure out the pitching if you want to do the two-way thing. I don't think Jack Caglione's going to be a two-way.
Yeah, I think he's that a ways sucks. Away. I think he's probably as far away from that as you can possibly get. The Royals need to have him get locked in, solidified offensively at the big league level. But it was, I think, a glimmer of hope how patient he was at the plate and really got that comeback started for the Royals last night. We take a look at the wild card race in the American League. The good news for the Royals, obviously, they beat the Guardians last night. They're a game back of them. If you beat them tonight, and by the way, Stephen Kolek is pitching in the game tonight against Gavin Williams, who's been really good for the Guardians. You can't drop the series against the team in front of you, so you've got to get this one again tonight, too, and split that series. You'll then be a game ahead of Cleveland in the wild card race. The bad news for the Royals, Seattle keeps on winning, and Texas keeps on winning. Seattle won last night. They've won five in a row. The Rangers have won four in a row, and they're the two teams that you are chasing for that final wild card spot. The Royals are not out of the hunt at all. It does make that upcoming Seattle series that much more crucial. It doesn't get any easier for the Royals either. They continue their road trip after tonight, going to Philly, and Philly is one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. So it's going to be a tremendous challenge. I would say the chances of them making the playoffs are non-zero. They're not zero, but they're fairly low at this point.
They're close to zero.
They
may be in the hunt, but it might be a pitch black hunt in the freezing cold at this point.
You're going to have a lot go your way. Unfortunately, to your point, TJ, as you mentioned it a little while ago, it's not all in the Royals' control. They don't just control their own destiny. You've got to get some help from a team like the Rangers. The good news for the Royals, they do hold the tiebreaker against Texas, but you've got to have them cool off a little bit if you want to chase them down.
Yeah, it's a tough stretch, absolutely. That's what we've just been saying. So you got to get these games done, and then just kind of, it's just kind of the bet that the Royals made. You know, that's the reason that you want to, the games matter in April, is because you want to be at this point to have those 10 extra wins so you can control your own destiny. You talked about magic numbers earlier. The Royals are in a part right now where there's like six different magic numbers.
There are.
A place where you don't want to be.
And everything ebbs and flows day by day with the results of every single game. Jalen Thompson told us he thought it would come down to the final couple games of the regular season. It very well might do that. You'll be able to listen to the game tonight, the finale of the series in Cleveland, right here on KFH. We'll have the coverage for you there. Also on KFH, a lot of talk about Wildcat football. We've got more on the Chris Kleiman Show tonight at 6 o'clock. You can tune in to 97.5 and 1240 KFH to listen to the Chris Kleiman radio show, and then Royals baseball beginning at 7 o'clock. On the other side, let's get into football. Some Chiefs headlines to get to. We'll do that next. Tommy Caster and TJ Cleland at Sports Daily coming right back.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on KFH. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland in for Jacob Albrock today on this 25th anniversary of Sports Daily coming live. 25 years ago today is when the very first episode of this program launched here on KFH. We appreciate everybody for being along for the ride over the last quarter century. With TJ in today, now would be a good time to let everybody know that tomorrow on the program, we'll be talking high school football. Week one is in the books. Week two is coming up tomorrow, all around the Metro, the City League, and all the schools around the area. We'll talk Ketchikan, Kansas. We'll talk about the big games of the week. High school football coverage on Sports Daily, by the way, is brought to you by Zintex. Remodel your bathroom in as little as one day with Zintex Remodeling Group. That's Zintex.com. TJ will do that tomorrow, but already looking forward to recapping everything that happened in high school football around the area last week.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff going on. A lot of great games in week one, a lot of great games in week two coming up. So going to be an awesome season. Nobody really knows who's that good or not right now. And so that's kind of the fun part of these early weeks. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We'll get into that tomorrow on the program after we do our Friday football picks with the entire crew tomorrow here on the program. Let's get into some football talk with the Kansas City Chiefs and everything right now, TJ, with the Chiefs surrounding the health of Xavier Worthy and what's going to happen with him. How long is he going to be out? Is he going to miss some time? I saw an article yesterday from Nate Taylor from ESPN, covers the Chiefs, talking about how Andy Reid said that Xavier Worthy doesn't need surgery. The team is not planning on putting him on IR, and they're hopeful that he can come back in a couple of weeks. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a little bit surprised by that, just because I feel like with that kind of injury, you might want to be a little bit more careful with it. But it sure sounds like the team is expecting him to be back in short order.
Yeah, it's going to be a couple of weeks still, I think. You know, obviously the IR designation just kind of handicaps you on when they can come back. So I think that it's going to be a lingering thing. It's going to be a couple of weeks till I think that we're going to see him play. Maybe three, something like that. And then after that, it may just be a snap count.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Type of thing, maybe 3 weeks at the minimum, and then it's a questionable limited practice, not able to play on Sunday. So yeah, it couldn't have come at a worse time. You know, a point that I thought about is the fact that, you know, they had the reports that Rashee Rice was going to meet with the disciplinary committee in week four and then talk about the suspension after that point. And everybody was like, well, I don't know if I want him to get suspended in week five and then miss 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But now you're like, maybe that would have been a good thing. You know, we would have been missing two receivers at the exact same time. So it stinks. The good part about it, as much as this game is kind of huge this weekend for a Super Bowl rematch, it's not a division game. The part that's kind of scary for the Kansas City Chiefs right now is that they're 0-1 in the division and everybody else won a game. So they're at the bottom of the AFC West. So it's not like it's a monumental climb to get back up or anything like that, but it's a really good division this year. And being handicapped with two of your best wide receivers down is really going to hurt you, because the wide receiver room's it's not great right now.
A new report just came out not that long ago, and from Diana Russini from The Athletic and the New York Times, formerly of ESPN, on her podcast that dropped today, she said that she wouldn't be surprised if Xavier Worthy is able to suit up next week against the Giants in week three. To me, I don't think he should, even if he could. Like, that's a game, that's the one game on the schedule that you feel like, do we really need him?
Yeah.
Right? Like, maybe let him set out an additional week and get even better to come back. That report's a little bit more surprising to me.
Yeah, I can't imagine a world where they're going to do that. The Chiefs have always kind of not been aggressive on things until it gets to the playoff time or anything like that. So I can't imagine, especially they'll just – I think the part that kind of hurt them on Friday down in Brazil is the fact of, like, it wasn't so much the fact that they didn't have Xavier Worthy. It was the fact that they game planned literally their entire offense around Xavier Worthy, it sounded like. They kind of just had to adjust on the fly. And on the second half, Hollywood Brown played really well. I think that they probably did adjust towards doing something more to that nature. So I think a week of prep is not – it's not going to, like, hurt them the worst. It's going to hurt them more in the fact of, like, we have Hollywood Brown, and then next man up is Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, that's going to be the part that hurts them the most. But I think that – as you said, I think that going into a game with Hollywood Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Tyquan Thornton is going to be a good enough wide receiver core to get it done against the Giants. Every team's good in the NFL, but you know, that's one that you think that you should be okay with.
It might be good enough to get it done against the Giants. Is it good enough to get it done against the Eagles this Sunday? That's the major question going into this ball game. And you know, they're going to have to change the game plan. They're going to have to. They're going to have to change the way they approach this game offensively, I think. Jacob and I have been talking about this all week long, about what the Chiefs are going to have to do to combat the Eagles. And all you have to do is look back at the opening game for the Eagles against the Cowboys. Where the Cowboys had their success is when they ran the ball. With a guy, and like, let's be real about this for a second. The running backs that the Cowboys have are not elite running backs. They're not. Like, you've got Javonte Williams as your primary ball carrier. He's fine, but he's not Derrick Henry. He's not Saquon Barkley. Like, and they had success on the ground against the Eagles. So if the Cowboys can do that and hang with the Eagles in that regard, that's the recipe But the major question is, will the Chiefs do that?
I think the other major caveat of that is that the Eagles' main defensive lineman got thrown out of the game.
Well, true.
30 seconds in for spitting on somebody. So I don't think that's going to happen against the Chiefs. If it does, then we might have a bigger conversation to talk about on the show, is that what's wrong with Jalen Carter to keep spitting on people. Yeah, I'd like to see them obviously run the ball. Oh, yeah, there, Rick Klein agrees with me there. I'd like to see him run the ball more. It's Andy Reid, though. We haven't seen him do that a ton. So I don't know. The Eagles' defense is just kind of just take what you can. I don't really know what the perfect game plan for this is. You'd think that without your two best wide receivers that you will run the ball more. But knowing Andy Reid, I wouldn't bet a lot of money on that.
Yeah, I mean, Rick on our video stream agrees with you. He says they probably ran more without Jalen Carter playing. That is true. But, you know, I think that you have to try to take what you can away from that opening game. And we're kind of back, TJ, to a very similar place where we were middle of the regular season last year, where the Chiefs were down their top wideouts. They did have Xavier Worthy playing, but he was a rookie. He hadn't fully come into his own yet. You were down Rashee Rice. You were down Hollywood Brown. You were even down Isaiah Pacheco. And the Chiefs had to find other ways to win games. And they were able to do that. You've got to lean into that more. Now, they did go and get reinforcements. They bring in Kareem Hunt. They bring in DeAndre Hopkins. We talked on the program yesterday. That's, I think, unlikely to happen again because these are short-term things. And you've got Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy probably back. Well, we know when Rice will be back, but Worthy probably back in a couple of weeks. So I can't imagine they'll be rash and go out and try to bring somebody off the street or make a trade. Or I can't imagine that'll happen. But they've got to at least, I think, try to alter their game plan and where they end up focusing on offensively.
Yeah, I think that the thing that sounds just so crazy, I talked to a bunch of people at the Kansas State Fair yesterday about the Chiefs. And, like, if the Chiefs lose this game, even if the Chiefs lose this game and next game, if they're 0-3 to start the year, like, it's fine. Like, I'm really not worried about that. Like, obviously, the sky's going to fall down if the Chiefs start a season 0-3. But the fact of the matter is they're going to be 0-1 in their division and have a ton of opportunity to make it back up. Last year, we saw what they – or 2 years ago, we saw what they did when they squeaked into the playoffs. Like, it's obviously – like, these 6 weeks aren't going to be the Chiefs that you're going to see in week 17, week 18 down the stretch of this year. So, I'm not going to panic if they lose these games. I think they'll beat the Giants still. If they lose the Giants, there's a different conversation to be had there. But from a record standpoint, if they're 0-3, like, I don't think that the season is over by any means. I don't think it's going to be something worrisome by any means either. Like, right now, as the Chiefs sit, like, obviously, every national talking head, every national media, you turn on SportsCenter, they're like, is this the year the Chiefs aren't going to win the AFC West? And it's like, we've watched them lose one game without two of their best receivers on the field. Like, there's no room to panic, and the Chiefs have earned the benefit of the doubt at this point.
I will tell you, if the Chiefs start the season 0-3 or 1-2, I can't wait to see how Vegas reacts, because I think you'll probably be able to get pretty good value on them being a division winner, them being a conference winner, maybe even them winning the Super Bowl. Like, the values on that, I would imagine, are going to be pretty good if the Chiefs, you know, start that way this season, you know, 1-2 or 0-3. But the big task in hand is, how can they combat Jalen Hurts? And I really believe that, and I mentioned this yesterday, all the narrative, all the talk this week has been about the depleted wide receiver room and how they're going to be able to attack offensively. In my mind, what the major storyline should be is Justin Herbert ran all over you in week number one defensively. And now you've got a guy who does that even better in Jalen Hurts coming up this weekend. How do you game plan that? That's got to be top of mind and number one on the priority list for Kansas City, in my mind, going into this weekend.
Yeah, that's a good point. I talked about that the other day as well, is the fact of, like, they didn't have Xavier Worthy on the field, and that was definitely a major handicap in their offense, but they still put up 21 points.
They did.
Their defense gave up 27 points. Like, that's the other side of this as well. You know, we talked about the secondary of this team is just not the same secondary that they had last year. You don't have Justin Reed. It's a bit injured as well. So a lot of guys are having to step up in there, and the Chargers kind of took it. Like, Justin Herbert threw for 318 yards and three touchdowns, and then ran for 5 yards a carry, basically. So it's like, they kind of just exploited the Chiefs defense. So it kind of raises the question of, like, who is the Chiefs defense going to be this year? Like, is this going to be – last year they won a bunch of games because of the Chiefs defense and not because of the offense. Like, is this going to be a switch to go back to the old Chiefs days back in 2019, 2018 when they were scoring 50 points and losing
games? I don't think they have the firepower to do that. That's the issue, is that if the Chiefs defense is leaky in that way, yeah, and they're letting opposing offenses run all over them – I don't think the Chiefs offense can then pick that up at that kind of clip like they did a few years ago. A couple wild stats, which I just think are crazy, and I know, like, these are kind of cherry picked, but the Chiefs haven't won a game since January of this year. They lost the Super Bowl. They lost all three preseason games, and they lost in week one. So they're 0-5 at that point. And how about this? We're coming up on 2 years since the Chiefs have scored more than 30 points in a game. It wasn't – you have to go all the way back to the AFC Championship game against the Bills 2 years ago. Yep. That was the last time they scored more than 30 points in a game. So it's been a long time since we've seen them offensively put up that kind of clip. And so if you're asking the offense now to pick up the defense, which is, you know, has holes in it for sure from what we saw in week number one, that's a really tall task, I think, for Steve Spagnuolo's defense.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I talked about giving the Chiefs the benefit of the doubt because they always do find a way. But if there was a season to kind of doubt a little bit, you know, obviously, like, last year, nobody liked the offense. Like, I think that's just plain as day of how bad they kind of looked. And then it was like, well, it's fine because the defense is only going to give up 7 points. Like, it's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. And then you go back to the old Chiefs days where it's like, well, the defense is terrible, but it's fine because we have Patrick Mahomes throwing 50-yard passes. Like, this is the year where there is a little bit of,
there,
like,
are issues on both sides, like, you know?
All right, well, who's going to step? Like, the Chiefs have to do – is the special teams going to be amazing? Is Harrison Butker going to score 15 points a game or something like that? So, yeah, I don't know. It's the most interesting season, which is crazy to think about because they just went to 3 straight Super Bowls. But I think this might be the most interesting regular season to think about how they're going to be able to get it done, if they're going to go back to the old Chiefs ways, if the defense is going to step up, or if we're going to see some struggles somehow.
Revenge has got to be on the mind for Kansas City, and we'll talk more about that game tomorrow on the program. We'll pick that game in our Friday football picks as well, as it's a Super Bowl rematch on Sunday, Chiefs and Eagles. Before we go to break, a big thanks to our friends over at Crestview Country Club for being a supporter of this program. We're getting into kind of that that second summer stretch. It's going to be warm this weekend, and so a great opportunity to get out and play some golf. Call our friends over at Crestview Country Club. They'll give you a tour. They'll have you check out all the facilities, everything they've got going on there. It's a great place to be, and we are so happy that they are supporters of this program. Give Crestview a call. That's going to wrap things up for hour number one on the program. Coming up in our next hour, our betting insider PJ Glasser will join us, Tim Fitzgerald to talk K-State, and a whole lot more. Don't go away. It's Sports Daily coming right back.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.